Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Under this law now going forward, do you think that Americans can have that confidence that their money will be safe from what goes on the street?
If they make safe investments, I would make several points. First of all, the answer is essentially yes. If Barack Obama is reelected as I expect him to be. If Mitt Romney is elected, no, the answer will be no. They will put back into place regulators who don't believe in this regulation and may even be able, if they got control of the House and the Senate, to repeal it. So it very much depends. Mitt Romney's been very clear. He wants to go back basically to a less regulated system. If Barack Obama is reelected as I expect, then we will have good rules in place. And let me say, for instance, about the Volcker Rule, that's only a part of it. The Volcker Rule says that banks who get deposit insurance shouldn't engage in these risky transactions and derivatives. But there's an even more important part of the Volcker Rule that says nobody, whether you're a bank or not a bank, should engage in risky transactions with derivatives. There need to be rules.
There's a lot of political reporting that Wall Street is sort of abandoning the president and his fundraising efforts and advocacy efforts for the election, that they're upset maybe about parts of Dodd-Frank, but really that they're hurt, by his rhetoric, that they're you've made comments about their feelings being hurt, but that they don't like what they hear for the president. You talk to them all the time. Are they hurt? What do you make
of
that?
Yes, I think they are behaving, frankly, in a way that appalls me. They are much more concerned about insult than injury. The financial reform bill, they don't like it, but it's not bankrupting them. It's not wrecking them. I believe, and by the way, to the extent that it does, we are talking about people who have more money than they will ever know that they have, who can't possibly spend it. When they get upset because the president said we're going to tax carried interest, if you're making more than $1 million a year and we raise your tax by 5.6% on the amount over $1 million, you wouldn't even know it unless your accountant called you up and told it to you. I think what's happened is they genuinely believe that they were just the basis of the economy, that they were keeping things going, that they were doing such wonderful things. And the president correctly said, you know what, you guys messed up and you didn't just make mistakes, you screwed up the whole economy. There's no question there's been a great switch. And I find it particularly interesting, and I've told this to some of the financial leaders, they are so hurt by the president that they're supporting people who act against their own interest. Because, for example, the biggest single threat to the American economy today is Europe. Our economy is outperforming the European economy. We've been doing better. We'd be doing even better if the Republicans hadn't slowed down some of these things. The Republicans, in this right-wing frenzy that's taken them over, are trying to stop us from helping Europe avoid disaster. They're trying to stop the International Monetary Fund from participating. They objected when the Federal Reserve did an agreement with the European Central Bank, which was very helpful. They've objected to the Federal Reserve's quantitative easing, which has clearly been stimulative to the economy. And they are now objecting to the policies. When I talk to people in the financial industry, they tell me they want us to be doing things which the Republicans are objecting to. But their feelings are so hurt because we said they messed up that they are contributing to the political success of people who follow policies they don't want.
Now, you have said recently that you thought that the president's announcement that the administration would not defend DOMA, which administrations through the Solicitor General generally defend the laws that are on the books, it's their job, that his decision to not defend DOMA was a bigger deal than the president saying he's personally for gay marriage.
The federal government, through the executive and legislative branches, doesn't decide who gets married. That's a state matter. When the president said it state by state, he was simply expressing the fact. Now, it is conceivable that the Supreme Court might say that no state had the right to do that. But as a matter of policy, of the elected branches making policy, there's no role for the federal government vis-a-vis marriage except in the Defense of Marriage Act, which said you can get married if Massachusetts says you can, you two women, but we won't let you share Social Security. We won't recognize that in joint taxes. We won't allow you inheritance and other benefits of marriage. And so when the president opposed that, he was taking a step against the only part of DOMA that has binding legal effect. And that's why I did think that was most important. Secondly, and it's a narrower, in some ways, technical point, but a very important one, he said that going forward, as far as he was concerned, the federal government would take the position that you could only justify discrimination against people based on sexual orientation or gender identity if you had a very, very good reason. That's the general translation of the phrase level of scrutiny. In American law, to justify a distinction between people based on race is virtually impossible, as it should be. To justify a distinction based on gender is not as hard as on race, but it's hard. To justify a distinction based on economic activity is easy, as it should be, because those are matters of policy. Until the president made his announcement, the federal government's position had been that it was as easy to justify discrimination against gay people as it was against people's economic activity. And he said, no, we're going to elevate the status of gay people and transgender people to the point where you cannot discriminate against them unless you have a very good reason. And he said, in the case of the Defense of Marriage Act, there's no such good reason. So it was that combined thing that made that so important.
The rate of change has really been astounding. All the while you've served, you came here in the closet, you're leaving a married gay man. And I wonder if you'll tell me if this is going too far, but it seems, in the way that we seek patterns, that in a way you're a bit of an embodiment of this drastic rate of change, having been an elected politician in the closet
well,
and leaving
again. I appreciate it. I'm a beneficiary of it. I've tried to bring it along, but I agree with you. You phrased this absolutely right. The rate of change for lesbian, gay, and bisexual people has been enormous. Now, I want to begin by saying that doesn't make me grateful, because we're talking about a hateful, damaging prejudice that never should have existed. And the fact that we're getting rid of it sooner than we thought is not any reason for me to thank anybody, but it is the fact that we are getting rid of it. I think, by the way, and I could be making this argument later, that it's because we did two things. First of all, we became honest about who we were, identified ourselves as gay and lesbian, and then used our political rights. And there's been a debate about tactics, and I think the political way has worked well. But yes, it has moved more rapidly than I would have thought. And yes, it's moved more rapidly with lesbian, gay, and bisexual, and with transgender. You know, sometimes 20-year-olds have a view that's different than 50-year-olds, but by the time the 20-year-olds are 50, it won't be that different. In this case, every indication we have is that people under 30 just think the whole notion of being worried about someone else's sexual orientation is bizarre and fetishistic.
A lot of conservative kids feel that way, who I met at CPAC,
yes,
for instance.
When
they
I
don't
said
care.
People under 30, yes, I'm not differentiating. And that's why I think within 10 to 12 years, the battle for full legal equality will be essentially over.
You're getting married in July.
It's yes.
been widely reported. You've said it's important in the timing of your wedding. You're not running for re-election. You have said it's important for members of Congress to deal with you, serve with a married gay man. Why is that?
Because the best weapon against prejudice is reality. Prejudice is literally ignorance. And we suffered from anti-gay prejudice because so many of us until fairly recently hid the fact that we were gay. So I think the reality of who we are breaks down the prejudice. There's been a lot of opposition, obviously, to same-sex marriage. In every state where same-sex marriage has happened and stayed in effect, the opposition goes away because people see there's no problem. A year ago, people were on the conservative side fulminating about what would happen to the military if we repealed Don't Ask, Don't Tell and let lesbian and gay and bisexual transgender people serve openly. We repealed it. It hasn't had any negative effect.
Have you had any indication from the Republican leadership in the House, one way or the other, about them recognizing, to whatever extent there is, official spousal recognition?
Oh, no, not at all. In fact, when Tom Foley was Speaker, he allowed the partners of members who were not married to get something, I don't know what it said, spouse or something. Now, Jim has an identity, an ID card. It says designee. It's about as, unromantic as you can be.
To whatever extent there is a designation for spouse in this house, Jim will not be, according to
the leadership.
He won't
be a spouse. He'll be designee. The Democrats, however, he's a member of the Democratic Spouses Club even now and will be even more so. And I wish this wasn't the case. You know, people say, oh, don't be partisan. Well, I'd like not to be partisan. I didn't used to be as partisan before the Republican Party moved so far to the right. There are very few issues in America where the two parties are as divided on the rights of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people to legal equality. That's what we're talking about. I don't care about their attitudes. I don't want to hang out with most of them anyway. But the Democrats are essentially fully supportive of legal equality, and the Republicans essentially fully opposed to legal equality. And as long as the Republicans are in control of the House, that's what happens.
Are you a gay icon at this point? Do you think you are?
Let me say this. I hope I've learned enough in 40 years in elected office not to answer questions like that.
Do you think people view you that way? People know I cover politics, and they say, oh, Barney Frank. Other people refer to you. That's why I ask you. I'm not trying to put you on the spot to be funny.
Look, I am aware of the public aspect of what I do. I think the fact, frankly, even recently, that I happen to be the chairman of the Financial Services Committee, which I won by the extraordinary feat of simply being in Congress more than anybody else on the committee at the time. I happened to be there when this terrible crisis hit. And I think the fact that I was seen by people in that position of responsibility, and I did make a point of reminding people that I was gay, helped diminish the prejudice. And so I do think I've been in a position where, because of the prominence I've had elsewhere and that I'm openly gay, I've been able to diminish it. And I think also, to be honest, you know, it's the stereotyping thing. I think Jim and I are a couple who help diminish the stereotypes. I don't know what people think about Jim, and if you look at some of the portrayals in the media, but Jim's very different than that. And I am conscious of the fact.
So how's the wedding planning coming? Is it locked down, or is it, you have
Lisa? It is. It's a little stressful, but Jim and I called in some reinforcements, Jim's mother and my sister, who between them, you know, weddings were new for both of us, but Jim's mother married off three of his siblings, and my sister married off two of her children. So they've been helpful to us. And I just talked to Jim. He was up at his mother's house today. They're going through the RSVPs. We've got it pretty well organized.
Are you, do you have any taste for wedding, place settings and decorations?
No, we got that to the hotel. I'm not very focused on those things, but we are dealing with the hotel on that one. I'm not getting into that much. We're going to have a disc jockey. Jim has been talking to him, and we've been talking about songs and gotten suits for all the guys who are going to be in the wedding for that.
It's too early to be nervous. You're not nervous about the wedding.
No, it's under control. I think we've done a pretty good job of planning it. Look, we have a certain issue about we don't want it to be a spectacle, and I anticipate there may be some disappointed press people when we tell them they're not invited. But
and no Secret Service, obviously.
No, I was asked if I would invite the president. It's not his fault, but he brings them with them, and they can ruin a party.
Once you're out of this game and you're retired from politics and starting a new phase of your life, are you going to be the guy getting on the phone to colleagues to phone in audibles from Massachusetts or wherever you are when you see you read about something in the Times or in the Boston Globe?
No, I will be doing it myself. I hope to be a kind of, I expect to be a participant in the public policy debate in some ways with fewer constraints than today. Not that I'm afraid to say things. I've always been able to say what I wanted. But I won't have any parades to march in. I won't have any 8 a.m. fundraisers to go to. I won't have constituent issues which people legitimately want me to deal with and take my time, and they have a right to that. I expect essentially people said, what are you planning to do? I'm going to run my mouth for money. I'm going to make lectures. I'm going to write some, both for periodicals, I hope, and books. Do some commentary probably on TV. So I expect to be speaking out. I mean, I know I don't plan to be whispering in anybody's ear. I want to be a participant in the public debate. And I think in one sense, I'll have a better shot at it because there is a cynicism now that people use when they listen to any of us when elected office. I think my views are now screened through he's just saying that to get votes. I'll be saying very much the same things, but with less of an automatic dismissal on the part of some people.
Well, thank you for the time, Congressman.
Okay.
And congratulations.
Thank you.
As a newly married to be.